It's my pleasure to introduce the next speaker, Professor King Lian Ko, and we have to particularly congratulate her. This is her first time with PowerPoint, and I'm sure many of us remember our first times with PowerPoint, and it's a very brave thing, so appreciate this. She received her degrees from University of Malaya in Singapore, University of Singapore, and the University of Geneva. She's a member of the Faculty of Law, the National University of Singapore, and director of the Asia-Pacific Center for Environmental Law. And she was recently appointed member of a panel of experts in environmental law, the Permanent Court of Arbitration at the Peace Palace in The Hague. She was co-chair of the Course Planning Committee of IUCN, APCEL, and UNEP Training Course for Environmental Law Professors on Capacity Building for Environmental Legal Education in the Asia-Pacific region. She teaches environmental law at the university level, was co-director and resource person in a number of urban and industrial environmental management seminars sponsored by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Singapore, and she's one of three editors of Capacity Building for Environmental Law in the Asia-Pacific region. Please join me in welcoming Professor Ko.
For me to be invited, and I would like to thank the organizers. Before I begin, I would just like to give a caveat. In my legal analysis, what I'm dealing with are challenges. I'm posing more questions than I'm answering. This is because there are many facts which are still not known or still not certain. Some of the areas which I have done in my paper have been covered by able scientists. The facts that I rely on are from newspapers, which may or may not be reliable. So with this caveat, let me begin. I would like to consider the topic in two sections, one on avian flu, the other one on SARS. And this is the pattern of my presentation. Introduction, policy and legal challenges, policy challenges on culling. I am focusing on the question of culling from the point of view of conservation, of biodiversity. I'll consider the extent of culling, and I will also consider the principle, the precautionary principle, and to see whether this principle applies and to what extent it applies. In regard to legal challenges, I shall consider some of the multilateral environmental agreements on biodiversity, such as the Bonn Convention on Migratory Species, the Convention on Biodiversity, and the Ramsar Convention. And I shall touch on the national laws dealing with avian flu. I will also flesh out the FAO-OIE guidelines to prevent and control avian flu, dealing with policies and strategies. In the case of SARS, I'm following the same pattern. Before I begin, perhaps I will show some slides on the newspaper cuttings, which tells a story. The first slide is on the extent of the problem of avian flu and SARS in the region. As we have told, many countries in the region, some 10 countries in the Asia-Pacific region, have culled thousands of birds, poultry, and this is really a very serious problem. And there has been a recent recurrence. On 26th of July, it was reported that bird flu has spread to 18 Thai provinces. Bird flu outbreak, worse yet to come, we have been told that. And again, on 12 September, just this month, it was reported that there are now bird flu cases in Kelantan. Kelantan is a state northeast of Malaysia. This is an area where there are many fighting cocks which have been illegally imported into Malaysia. And it was found that the handlers of fighting cocks have been affected by avian flu. we are also told that bird flu has spread among cats. In fact, the natural reservoirs of avian flu have extended to cats, to tigers, leopards, horses, and dogs. This shows Singapore's battle plan. We take a very strict measure. We take very strict measures in exterminating the disease, bird flu crisis. This shows that there has been some cover-up among some countries. Thaksin, who is the prime minister, slams WHO bird flu speculation. And in China too, we are told that at the beginning, there was also some cover-up about the extent of avian flu and SARS. These are all very familiar news. I've mentioned these before. Right. On the question of migratory birds, there was a newspaper account, in fact, early in January, where the question was posed, are migratory birds responsible? It was reported that the feces of migratory birds were found in poultry farms. And when the feces dried up, the fumes that were generated by the feces were inhaled by the chickens, and that was how they got the avian flu. Whether this is correct or not has been, in fact, confirmed last Saturday by WHO. Just before I came out, there was a newspaper report that WHO has now confirmed that migratory birds are the cause. So in January, the question was posed, as I said, but now it looks like migratory birds are to blame. And although these birds are least resistant to the infection, nonetheless, they do carry the virus, so it is reported. I think you know these facts. I will not dwell into them. Now, on the question of culling, as you know, there has been a lot of culling carried on in various countries in the region, in particular in Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, Indonesia. And I would like to consider the policy behind culling. What should be the policy behind culling? Because I think in some countries there have been overreaction to avian flu and to SARS. I mean, just give an example in the context of SARS, when it was said that civet cats were the cause of SARS. In Singapore, the government started to kill even domestic cats. This was criticized by the conservationists in Singapore, because domestic cats has nothing to do with civet cats. So this shows the fear and the action being taken by some governments. If we look at the precautionary principle under Rule 15, it says where there are threats of serious and irreversible damage, lack of full scientific certainty shall not be used as a reason for postponing cost-effective measures to prevent environmental degradation. Now, taken in this formulation, does the principle, the precautionary principle, apply in our context? The basis of the precautionary principle is that one does not need to wait for scientific certainty to take a particular course of action. And formulated thus under Principle 15 of RIO, it says where there are threats of serious irreversible damage. If you look at this principle in the context of avian flu, for example, what is the irreversible damage? Is it the fear that a pandemic may occur? Is it because of food security? If this is so, then lack of scientific certainty shall not be used as a reason for postponing cost-effective measures to prevent environmental degradation. But to prevent what environmental degradation? So this principle does not apply in this case, but if we look at it from a higher level of abstraction, of course the principle, the application of the principle depends on the context. The precautionary principle is an approach to risk management that has been developed in certain circumstances of scientific uncertainty, reflecting the need to take prudent action in the face of potentially serious risk without having to await the completion of further scientific research. So if we take the case of culling, we ask ourselves, should there be a threshold to culling? Threshold to culling, for example, of chickens. It may well be that a particular government may kill all imported chickens if only one chicken is found to have avian flu. Is this a good policy? And in fact, in Singapore, when avian flu was at its height, there is a little island north of Singapore, and there are just a few hundred chickens. And the government said that it will take the kiasu in Singapore. Kiasu means K-I-A-S-U, in local terms means we do not want to lose out. It is better to overreact, to take a proactive approach rather than a reactive approach. But from the conservationist point of view, is this a good policy? And I think we should look at the policy of culling from the point of view of an ecosystem approach, which is that everything is connected. If we kill or overkill the birds, for example, the migratory birds, will there be an adverse impact subsequently? Here perhaps I might give an example to demonstrate the ecosystem approach. In the case where, I think in the 1950s, General Mao Zedong asked the whole population to make noise so that the birds, which he thought ate up all the crops, would die. So this was done, and everybody either used gongs or tins. They made terrible noise, and all the birds fell down after 3 days. They were circling up in the air, and they died of exhaustion. What happened subsequently was that the rice crops failed. This was because while the birds ate a bit of the rice crops while eating the worms, without the birds, all the worms ate up the crops. So I think this demonstrates the ecosystem approach. So as a matter of policy, to what extent should we apply the precautionary principle? The precautionary principle is a rather controversial principle. It has been discussed in the context of biodiversity, and it is not very certain. It is unclear in setting standards. It has been criticized. It stipulates that the absence of scientific certainty should not be used as a reason for taking action. Is it a practical means of responding to risk management in wildlife conservation? And can this be used for other serious threats? So, I think while we have to be a bit cautious in applying the precautionary principle, we have to think of other alternative approaches. One is the adaptive management approach, which calls for constant monitoring, whereas the precautionary principle may be a one-time approach. I think the two should be taken together. there should be continuous assessment since we find that every day something new crops up from the scientific point of view. How is it? Right. Talking about culling, we have this statement from FAO that eliminating wild birds is not an appropriate way to control the spread of avian flu virus. Killing wild birds will not help to prevent future bird flu outbreaks. How do we prevent? Good animal husbandry, control, surveillance, and monitoring. Now let us look at the legal challenges. We have the Convention on Migratory Birds of Wildlife, and under this convention, range states have to make sure that they do not destroy migratory birds, because migratory birds are shared resources. But in exceptional circumstances, there could be some deliberate killing, but this has to be precise. So if migratory birds, which are perceived to be the cause of avian flu, the question then is, what is the extent to which a particular country which has ratified this convention, what is the extent to which it can kill these birds? This has to, the extent should be very precise. In fact, this convention has not has no provision on, you know, the extent to which culling is required. I think it has to be worked out. In the case of the Ramsar Convention on the Management of Wise Use of Wetlands, the question then is, if migratory birds or ducks and fowls are found in wetlands, to what extent should they be destroyed? Here again, it may be feared that some governments, in trying to cull birds, ducks and geese and waterfowls, they might destroy wetlands of international importance. So we have to consider that as well. Under the Convention on Biological Diversity, the question of sustainable use comes in. If poultry, pigs have avian flu, the question then is, how does the concept of sustainable use apply under Article 10 of the CBD? Article 10 requires management to be sound. And in this particular context, I think we should consider questions of good animal husbandry. The concept of ecosystem also applies in determining what constitutes sustainable use. So we should adopt the ecosystem approach. In regard to national laws, in Singapore we have the Animals and Birds Act, which gives the Director General the power to cull, but of course the question then is, what is the extent of culling? We also now have the FAO-OIE guidelines to prevent and control avian flu, policies and strategies. One of them is the zoning approach to place animals into small pockets for facility of control. This is important because this would enable management to be conducted more soundly. Establish regional laboratory research into the disease, emergency preparedness, reporting, and so on and so forth. So there are a number of guidelines laid down here. I won't go through all. In the case of SARS, I think here we have to consider, in the case of SARS, which happens in China, we have to consider the culinary habits of the Chinese. They love exotic foods, and I think we should try and legislate to prohibit them from eating these foods. Even in the height of SARS, this happens in Indonesia, the poo of the civet cats are used as coffee beans. The civet cats like to eat the berries, and after eating, they are excreted before they are really digested, and they are picked up and made into coffee beans. All right? So you can see the habits. The culling and conservation policy challenges are similar to that in avian flu. And in the case of CITES, I think we ought to look at the scope of CITES to see whether we should make some amendments in order to prevent trade in regard to animals which spread SARS. I think my time is up, but... Well, Singapore has made amendments in the Infectious Diseases Act to deal with SARS. There are certain measures under the amendments which gives the practitioner great powers to deal with cases where a person suffers from SARS. Then there are also the policies and strategies to control and prevent SARS, the regional and international responses. ASEAN plus three, meaning China, Korea, and Japan. And they have come together and they have laid down certain guidelines regarding quarantine, surveillance, public education, screening, APEC has also laid down some guidelines, who I think you know. And I would just like to conclude by saying that there ought to be more cooperation among the region and also among international organizations to combat the diseases. Thank you.